Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to talk about all things props, both in NBA, both in MLB, is Gilles Gallant, sports betting analyst with FTN Bets. You can follow him on Twitter at GDog5000, and that's dog, D-A-W-G. Gilles, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Rob. It's been a while. I'm glad to be back. NBA playoffs in full swing, baseball underway, almost here for the summer, so 2022 is looking up.
Yes, and speaking of NBA playoffs, I want to give an update. It's a stat that Jason Logan sends out every single day, and I really like it. So we're recording this Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Favorites went 2-1 straight up and against the spread. And in this postseason, favorites are 18-5 straight up, 16-7 against the spread, which is a clip of almost 70%. And on the total side of things, 7-16 to the under. That's almost 70% as well. So seeing a lot of skewed things. Then, Gilles, here's something interesting that I noticed. On both Thursday and Friday, five of the six NBA games have a line of -1.5, with the favorite being the road team. So there's a lot to go on here with these short spreads. It can be like, oh, of course the Suns are going to win. Of course the Bucks are going to win. Of course the Grizzlies are going to win. These things that we think, oh, of course, it's not exactly always happening, but also we're seeing the numbers heavily skewed one way.
Well, I find it funny that you were bringing up the favorites record, because you are correct. Favorites are overall crushing, but the two biggest favorites over the last couple of days, both the Bucks in game two, who were 10-point favorites, and the Suns as home point favorites against the Pelicans, they both got dropped and lost outright. You know what I mean? So this is the one thing about the playoffs. Now, some of it you could bring up context being like, well, Middleton got hurt and Booker got hurt, and maybe that wouldn't have been the case. But even with both of those guys in the lineup, those teams, both the Pelicans and the Bulls, they were taking it to them, and they were ahead in those games. So it's not just a fluke that they just snuck one by them, right? So I think that's the one thing, too, is that obviously we can make some money betting favorites and kind of maybe looking more towards the team that has the better matchups. But because it's the NBA playoffs and these teams, like a Bulls team or like a Pelicans team who was kind of counted out at the start of the season, they have more talent than I think we're realizing, and that they can steal a game or two in these series.
Yeah, and speaking of the injuries, that's one thing that I want to talk about on the prop betting side of things. So we saw Devin Booker get injured, not sure of his status. Saw Chris Middleton get injured, not sure of his status. What does that do for the prop market of some of these other players? So I'll give an example. Last night I was on a bunch of three-point props because I knew we were going to be having this conversation. So I wanted to jam about things. And one of them was Fred VanVleet over 3.5 threes, -134. And boom, I see all the injuries for the Raptors. You're like, someone's going to have to carry the load. Fred VanVleet shoots 10 three-pointers, only makes two of them. So clearly we identified the opportunity, and I guess as Annie Duke would call in her book, this would be resulting. The process was correct. We identified the opportunities. The volume was there for Fred VanVleet. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work in our favor. So whether it's the Cam Johnsons of the world, or maybe Brooke Lopez all of a sudden is shooting to extend the floor a little bit more, how do you think about injuries as it impacts opportunities in the prop betting market?
Well, I think the one thing I will say is just off the top, I still like that Fred VanVleet bet. So I don't beat yourself up over it too much for losing, because the volume was there. If you looked at the amount of shot attempts that he takes and the fact that he had 10 three-point attempts, you would take that. I mean, he is a 40% shooter for the year from three-point range. You're asking for 30% just for the game. So it's not like you were asking for something that was just completely over the top. So I just wanted people to kind of know that. Now, from a three-point prop standpoint, two things. The injuries, obviously, like a guy like Cam Johnson is somebody that you want to consider for the Suns, or maybe a Cameron Payne, or even maybe to a lesser extent, Landry Shamet. Like, you know what I mean? Because those odds are going to skew as if they are basically playing the Booker role, or in Chris Middleton's case, Pat Connaughton or Grayson Allen might be playing a little bit more of the shooter role. So you are going to see the books skew towards that, and you are going to see their odds decrease compared to what you were getting them maybe, say, in game one or game two. But that doesn't mean that you have to take them. I think if anything, what happens is a lot of the time these coaches, Yes, the backups come in, but they still like to stick with their guys, especially the starting lineup. So I think the one thing is sometimes we like to get too cute, maybe, and maybe looking at, like, one of the things that I like to do is I like Pat Connaughton a lot, because mainly because his 3-point attempts, when you look at it for his entire season and over the last year, let's say he takes 7 shots a game, 6 of them are from behind the arc. If you're going to hit a 3-point prop, they got to take 3-point shots, and the attempts have got to be there. So the volume has got to be there, but also the shot chart has to be there. So I think the main thing that I would say is look at the injury report before the game. You already know that Booker is likely not going to play. So if we're using the Phoenix Suns game, next game as an example. So Cameron Johnson is still not going to be in the starting lineup. He's probably going to be a 6-man still in that role. But the one thing that's good about that is that because he's playing less minutes, they're going to skew his line as if, like, it's over 1.5, probably at -150. Not great odds, but you know, because Booker's not playing, he's going to probably play closer to 35 minutes instead of his usual 25 to 28 minutes. So even just that amount of more time on the floor, especially with this offense, especially with the way they push, I still think betting on guys that are going to replace a guy like a Booker or a Middleton are still worth a look. Just make sure not to be paying Booker prices for Cameron Johnson shots is kind of what I would say.
Yeah, and one thing that I noticed yesterday is I had 3 different 3-point bets, and they all had a different way that they unfolded, and I think it's a great example of what I learned. So I was on Kyrie over 3.5 threes plus 104. He went 0-for-1 from 3-point land. So not only did he not shoot enough threes to even hit that, he didn't even make any of them. So immediately I was like, these 3-point props are a loser until they're a winner. So by design, there's a lot of things that have to happen in order for you to get that desired outcome. So we got the Van Vliet, bad resulting. Kyrie never had a chance. But what I did hit on was Nikola Vucevic over 1.5 minus 167, over 2.5 plus 156. So they were sort of correlated one to the other to the other. He went 4 of 8 on 3-pointers. So that was another thing that I sort of liked, where we can feast or famine if you get it correct, where if you like someone that can be 4 or 5 a higher volume, hey, let's start playing those lower numbers, even if we don't exactly feel all comfortable dropping a 167 or a minus 150 for some of these odds.
Well, a good strategy is, and what you're kind of describing is the ladder strategy. What people will do is they'll identify a player who they know is likely going to play 35 to 40 minutes and is going to take a lot of 3-point shots, but the odds are skewed to the point where they're not, the odds are not facing that way. So a perfect example was game 3 with Gary Trent Jr. Gary Trent, pretty sick the first 2 games, played a combined, I think, like 25 minutes between the 2 games, went 0-for-2 kind of from 3-point range. A lot of people were kind of thinking that he might not still be ready to go by game 3, and books kind of reflected that as well, because when you looked at his prop odds for 3-point props to hit 3 or more, it was sitting at plus 200. That's usually way off, because if you look at his shot attempts, he's averaging like 6.5 to 7 3-point shots attempts per game. And there was a huge stretch during the season where he was just on fire, hitting like 5 in a game, 6 in a game, 7 a game. So you know he has the capability, and you know as well, with it being a game 3, they're going to try to dump everything, like whole kitchen sink. Like, everybody's going to be shooting as much as they can. So what I ended up doing was just simple, like taking, like, you know, I wouldn't go too nuts on it, but like, even if you had $30, so you just put $10 on the 3, $10 on the 4, $10 on the 5. That way, if he still hits 3, you at least make your money back. But if he hits any more, you are going through the roof from a jackpot standpoint. And he ended up hitting 4 last night, which worked out for me, because the 4 was like plus 500 or something along those lines. So again, good idea. But again, not everybody's created equal. Gary Trent is a guy who shoots a lot of 3s. If you're trying to do that with like Giannis and trying to do like 2, 3, and 4, you're probably going to lose, because that's just not his game.
I love it. So we can be calculated aggressive, where you say, listen, someone has a high variance, because anytime you watch like a Warriors game or something and you see these people who are crushing the Steph 3, the Jordan Poole thing, and Jordan Poole over 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 3-pointers, you're like, oh man, that makes so much complete sense, where someone would just start dropping all of these things together. But it is a strategy to say, listen, we know that Gary Trent might hit 7 threes once every blue moon, but it is a possibility in that sort of force multiplier you can get if and when that does hit. You don't have to hit that many of them on the highest level for this to be profitable.
Yeah, and I mean, stagger it, right? And again, don't be putting money down that you can't afford to lose. Like, I think that's the main, I mean, that's a lesson for all betting, but especially for these when you're dealing with stuff that is plus 500 or more. But a guy like that you were just describing, Jordan Poole and Steph, those are probably not the best examples to do ladder props with anymore because books have caught on to them. To get over 3.5, you're looking at minus odds for Jordan Poole now. And that's usually odds that are reserved for the Steph Currys and the Damian Lillards of the world. And I'm not saying that Jordan Poole can't shoot as well as those guys. It's just, are you willing to pay that price? Now, he could do that. But again, another thing that is to take into consideration, like they're playing in Denver for game 3. Denver's a pretty good defensive team on the perimeter. I'm not sure if I would feel comfortable laying minus 130 for him to hit 4 threes against that defense in that Denver altitude. Whereas when they're playing, I was going to say Oracle, but when they're playing at Chase Arena, you know, you're playing in the friendly confines in San Francisco, and, you know, over 4 is at minus 130. Maybe if you feel good about it. But again, that's kind of, I feel like that's more of a long-term losing strategy to try to bank on that, because even the best three-point shooters are not going to be hitting 4 per game. Even Steph averaged less than 4 per game, and he's considered the best three-point shooter of all time.
So you've got a Toronto Blue Jays hat on right now, and I want to transition over to the MLB side of things, more specifically home run props, because yes. I see all of you, the Blue Jays fans, the contingent, everyone from covers who loves betting these home run props. I see you chiming in. Andrew Cayley loves doing his Blue Jays bets every single day. And when looking at home run props, we definitely need to talk about pricing, and we need to talk about mindset, because by design, baseball is designed to lose or not do something. So similar to Kyrie going 0-for-1 and not even have a chance, in baseball, you don't succeed 7 out of 10 times and you're a Hall of Famer. So now as we're talking about prop betting, it can be very challenging. So I see you guys talking about Vladimir Guerrero, who right now has 5 home runs on the year, and we're seeing home run props for him at plus 290 or maybe even as high as something like plus 350. And I'm curious if you can shed some light into your and sort of the Blue Jay community's mindset around how you're thinking about prop betting for home runs.
Yeah, so I did this last season, mainly after they returned to the Rogers Center, because that was my angles, because I've been to that stadium so many times. I've seen this offense of what they can do in this stadium, just as far as a hitter-friendly park, but also they just had sluggers basically between 1 through 5 in the lineup. So I knew when they returned to that confines after being in Buffalo and Florida for how long, that they were going to be juiced up. And that's kind of how it started this year. So like last season, just like baseball players, like I hit 13 of 47 home run bets that I did for the entire month of August. Doesn't sound great. Probably like less, right around 30%. But I made about 7 units of profit, because all I was doing was just basically taking 2 Blue Jays home run hitters between 1 through 5 in the lineup and just rotating them based on the pitcher matchup and based on the odds. So this season is a little more difficult, just because without a guy like Marcus Semien there, it is adding a little bit less protection for guys like a Bichette or a Guerrero, plus Hernandez is hurt as well. So that's another kick in the junk. But essentially what the strategy is for Blue Jays home run props specifically, is you bet them at home. You take 2 of the top 4 hitters. So you could be Vladdy, Bichette, George Springer, Teoscar, and maybe Zach Collins now might be starting to get into this realm as well, depending on how he keeps going. But essentially what you do is you take 2 of those guys, and then you look as well at the odds. So like a Vladdy, you want him usually over the plus 300 mark, because plus 300 is kind of the magic number for home run. Because if you look at it from a, let's say Vladdy hits 45 home runs in a season, and it's 45 different games, not, you know, multi-home run games, it would have to be the average of around plus 300 for it to actually like break even and maybe make a little money as well if you bet Vladdy all 162 games. I don't recommend that. I think that's too long of a grind. I think that's too much money to invest for such minimal profit, especially with the fact that if he starts hitting these home runs the way that he has, books will adjust and they'll put those odds below plus 300 eventually. They're not stupid. So what I try to do is then try to kind of see, okay, let's look at a pitcher matchup. Okay, the starting pitcher, he's faced Bo Bichette 12 times. Bo Bichette has 4 extra base hits in that time, as well as maybe 2 home runs, let's say, you know, in that time. So that's a pretty good metric, even though it's a very small sample size. It's still something that you have to weigh. But then also, the main thing that I like to look at for starting pitchers specifically is fly ball rate. You have to look at flat. You can't hit a home run off of a ground ball. That's just science. That's the way it works in the game. So if a starting pitcher, most of his outs are coming from fly balls instead of ground balls, a la like a Max Scherzer or a Garrett Cole, yeah, you're going to be able to probably cash in on more home run props on those guys than you would be on a Nathan Eovaldi or, you know, someone like that in the AL East where, you know, it's a little more difficult to get that kind of pop-up style. He's a little bit more of a trickier pitcher like that, not trying to blow by you the way that a Scherzer or a Cole would do, like from a fastball standpoint. So then that's kind of been the strategy. And so far this year, it has been great. I'm only 3-for-9 because I'm only betting home games. So I'm only up about a unit and a half. Initially, I started off hot. Like I was 3-3 in my first 6 picks, up like 11 units. I looked like a genius. And then, of course, baseball kicks in and you slump just like the players do and you only hit 30%. And maybe I become a Hall of Famer as a result. I don't know. But I do say that there is a profitable strategy to it if you just kind of look at the numbers and you look at and you stick to home games and looking at the core of the heart of the order of the Blue Jays lineup.
All right, I want to do some rapid-fire questions for you around this to help build our mindset. Number one, is there more or less value when someone like Garrett Cole or Max Scherzer is pitching where clearly they're good? Will the odds be proportionately better if they're flyball pitchers as opposed to, hey, let's start to identify the 4th and 5th starters because people will logically say, hey, let's just go after the crappy pitchers. But is there more or less value one way or another?
Absolutely. Garrett Cole is a perfect example because when he hit that home run off of Garrett Cole when they were playing in New York, he was about a +330 to hit a home run that night. The next day against Luis Severino, he was +275. So, and he didn't hit a home run. So, and not to say that Luis Severino doesn't have his problems with control and that he couldn't have hit a home run off of him. But I think that was the other thing too, is that right after that game, especially hitting it off of a marquee pitcher like that, all of the betting public was on Vladdy the next day because, again, he was just everywhere in the stratosphere of, like, look how awesome Vladimir Guerrero is. So from a Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer standpoint, yes, there is more value to it, but you got to be careful. And, again, don't be trying to get cute taking, like, the 7th and 8th guy in the lineup. You might be able to cash on it, and he might be sitting there at +500. But, again, it is few and far between compared to, if we're using the Blue Jays as an example, who had, you know, 1-4, 70% of their home runs came from those positions in the batting order.
All right, next thing. Let's go with players who have started slow. Mookie Betts hitting 178, 0 home runs. Aaron Judge, 1 home run, 2 RBIs on the season. So these are both prolific players that can be said in the same sentence as Vlad Guerrero. Vlad's crushing. Yeah. These guys are not. Is there opportunity on players who are slumping, or how do you think about when someone is hot versus somebody is not?
I mean, I don't really skew it too much. For me, I feel like Mookie Betts is probably a good example to use for this because he's so protected in that order. I mean, the Dodgers are what, like 10-3, and he's hitting less than 200. Like, I mean, think about that for a second of how deep that team is. But that's one of the things that's beautiful about the Dodgers. If you're going to use the NL version of what the Jays do, is that you could bet on the guys that are hitting 6th, 7th, and 8th, like a Will Smith, Max Muncy, Justin Turner, and cash at like a +450, +500, pretty good for those home run bettors. And they're probably going to hit 25 to 30 home runs in that lineup. So I do think a guy like a Mookie Betts, yes, you probably got burned quite a bit, or not you specifically, but bettors have gotten burned trying to get, you know, betting on his over 1.5 extra base hits or home runs just so far struggling. But he's too good of a player that once we get into the summer months, you're going to see these guys just rack in home runs by like June, July, and August. So I'm not really worried about a guy like Mookie Betts. I think he's going to bounce back and still finish around +250, 275 batting average.
Do you suggest this team cluster approach more so than, hey, let me just start picking and choosing random big name players on teams? Because I like the logic of how you're thinking about this, because, all right, we've got a process as opposed to just saying, all right, I'm going to take some Juan Soto over here, some Aaron Judge over here. I'm going to take some Miguel Sano over here or whatever it is. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for me, that's what's worked. I'm not going to tell somebody else that they can't do it that way, because if they find an edge and a strategy that's working best for them, again, make the money, you know, win the bets. I am not going to tell somebody how to bet. I'm just saying from my standpoint, what's worked most for me is to be able to take one or two in the heart of an order of a team like the Blue Jays, because it minimizes risk. Even for a risky proposition, I'm looking for any element that I can that will reduce my risk and be able to potentially make me money. So being able to take guys like a Bo Bichette and a Vladimir Guerrero, especially with the fact that, let's say, Vladdy is hot right now and they don't want to pitch to him, maybe they're going to look more likely to pitch to Bo and maybe give him some pitches that he could hit, or a Teoscar maybe hitting right behind him, or Zach Collins. So that is the reason why, is that I like to bet guys that are almost kind of around Vladdy, almost because he draws in so much gravity of the way that they pitch to him, that there could be juicier pitches for the guys that are, you know, adjacent to him.
Last question. We're going to flip all of this upside down. Since baseball is a game that no happens more than less, what if we decided to put on our hat and said, we're going to be betting unders and nos on everything? So, for example, Vlad is minus 425 for a no to hit a home run. Aaron Judge, minus 390 to hit a no there. And you see, as these players go down the list, the Kurt Suzuki's of the world, it's going to be the minus 1,000 or more, minus 4,000. But it just started to get my wheels turning and saying, well, wait a second. Oftentimes, players' brand names can inflate things, and obviously we're playing the long game if we're just starting to chop these minus 400s to minus 1,000s. What are your thoughts on playing the no line?
I think it's risky, because let's use Vladdy as an example. It's more along the lines of, do you think he's going to hit a home run once every four games? Because essentially you're having to bet $400 to win one unit, you know what I mean, each time. And if he hits one in those four games, that means now you have to hit four more times of no correctly just to get that money back, right? Like, and it, for me, that just seems like very difficult to pull off, especially for a prominent hitter like himself, especially if they're coming on like a home stretch and they're going to be playing like the Orioles or, you know, or the Rangers again, just a team that is, you know, getting beat up quite early. So I'm not saying that there isn't any validity to the strategy, but I'm saying that you would have to be very careful about the guys that you would want to do. Now, maybe you would do that with like a guy like Mookie Betts that we were just talking about, and maybe you would have been able to make a unit or two in the first month of the season being able to fade that. But as soon as he hits one, you're going to be cursing yourself because of all the hard work and the days and time that you put in just to make that two units, and then it's all gone in one swing of the bat.
Yeah, and that's a big grind. And Jill, I know that you're someone who loves you some plus money. So there's no way we want to wake up every single day and grind out a bunch of no bets when we can be betting Will Smith plus 700 to hit a home run or something like that. Jill, really enjoy jamming with you. Where can everybody connect?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at GDAWG5000. That's GDAWG5000. And all of my written content is at FTNBets.com. I host a show twice a week on the FTN Network YouTube channel called Dog Day Afternoon on Wednesdays and Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern. And that's where I give out my best bets for the night. That might be my home run picks, my three-point props, my double-double props. If you ever want my picks, you can go right to FTNBets.com and get it there via Dog of the Day, or watch my show on Wednesdays or Fridays.
And I want to hear from you. What is your NBA playoff betting strategy looking like? Are you playing the prop market? Are you playing home run props? You can hit me up on Instagram or Twitter at Rob Cressy. Also, make sure to tag at Covers. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money. The broken yellow devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rope. Looking like the way the sound pump, pumping in your black trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.